All right, this is take two. This is what happens often when we do Theocast.
Take one was definitely for the blooper reel, the outtakes.
This is probably why we aren't ready to go live. I am not professional enough to do that. Oh, my goodness. So, anyways, it is so glad to be here with you. We just had a good laugh. And one day in heaven, maybe we'll explain to you what happened. But, oh, man, I got on a chain of words I couldn't get out of, and it just was a mess. So, we're here to hopefully fix that and not go down that road. But, I want to, first of all, go back to some things I did say that you didn't hear. And super thankful to have Patrick here. Patrick was a part of the original Semper Reformanda, part of the team that kind of helped get this up and rolling and help us with the design and the name, and helps Theocast in the background as well. Mm-hmm. And so I'm super thankful to not only have him part of the Theocast, but also church planting and just as a friend. So it's good to still have you here. Going back to this conversation, guys, there, one of the things that happens is, you know, Reformed theology, when you truly understand the 5 points of Reformed theology, like legitimate, not Calvinistic, not Calvangelical, but real covenantal theology, you realize that we're like a speck of sand next to this mountain of just bad
theology.
There are
not that many of us, relatively speaking.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
It's a small pond.
That's right. So then you start asking, well, do we have some kind of an obligation to call out or speak back or push back, or, you know, how do we go after this mountain of just horrendous bad theology? And I get that question a lot. And, you know, my response, I'll let you guys respond to that. Some of my response is, you know, I think Theocast has kind of a unique platform. I mean, you guys are a part of this transformation. We are trying to change churches. We are trying to encourage them and help them be more biblical. But I think when Paul talks about false teachers, like in Timothy, there's a couple of sections in there where he's talking about people who are coming in and trying to change the dynamic of the church. I think Paul had in mind the local congregation. Like, you need to protect your local congregation. You need to protect people from coming in there to preaching false doctrine. But I don't think Paul had like a global church in mind, as far as it's the responsibility of one local church or pastor to try and keep guard of all other churches. I don't think there's anything wrong with pointing out error. And Justin and I do this, and Patrick do this in our own pulpits. There's a difference between shepherding and guarding your own flock and then versus trying to change all other churches around the world. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are on that.
I mean, I'm happy to jump in really quick. I think on the one hand, in every good way that the three of us could mean it, like, we are only responsible for our respective local congregations who have called us to be a pastor there. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, it is those people that we are responsible for, and it is those people that we are called to shepherd and care for. That's helpful for me, so that I am very concerned and also quite happy to have conversations, for example, with members of Covenant Baptist Church about how they've been affected by the rise and fall of Mars Hill. Meaning how Driscoll's ministry impacted them 15 years ago, 20 years ago, how some of the great things just, man, fanned the flame of faith in their heart, how some of the harder things they couldn't quite understand, and it's produced a lot of just pain in their lives maybe in the last few years. I definitely want to have those conversations with people, with members of my church. As far as the broader church is concerned, granted, Theocast has a platform. And what we're trying to do, and this is what we're trying to do in our local churches with our people too, but ultimately the way that I would want to approach this is, yeah, we've got to do some deconstruction in that we need to identify things that are going on. We want to try to flip the light switch on so that people can see the furniture in the room, right? Give people some perspective. But then ultimately, rather than just kind of napalming it all and like just mowing people down and taking great pleasure in that, and in some senses saying, yeah, look at how smart we are. And rather than doing that, what I would be aiming to do, and I know you brothers agree, is, no, man, let's herald Christ. Let's keep Christ the main focus here. Let's offer people who are weary, let's offer them rest. Let's offer people who have been in bondage, let's offer them freedom. And let's pull people onto something better, which is the solid rock whose name is Jesus. I mean, if that posture is sort of coloring everything, if that's the tincture, to use an old word, of everything that we're saying, I think that we're on the right track. And we certainly, as we were saying earlier, want to do this with humility, understanding our own frames, that were it not for the grace of God, there go we. you know.
Yeah, I think that's really good because we've got some unique challenges pastoring in this day and age. We are exposed to so much. If you're pastoring
social media,
1,000 years ago, you only know what's going on in town.
Right there.
That's it. Right.
And maybe you get a letter from some town down the way, but it's like,
tops. That's what you get.
Right.
And so, and our congregations deal with this too, right? They can literally access any teaching they want from all over there. And they just get, it's a fire hose.
Bombarded.
And so I think on the one hand, we can't do everything. On the other hand, we have to recognize this reality of what our people are taking in. And so I think what you guys said is really good. I think what should govern what we engage with as pastors is what is affecting our people, right? You have to know your sheep and know what is influencing them. Like Justin, you talk about knowing people from your church were affected by this and are still affected by it. And so you lean into that as a shepherd. So I can't debunk everything. I don't have time to listen to everything, read everything. But I do care about what my people are taking in and shepherding them on how to process that stuff. And bring it back to something else. And I think I also like what you said about the kind of the proactive of building something. Because in our culture, deconstruction is pretty hot, right? That's what everybody likes to do.
Everybody likes to do it and it's pretty easy to do.
It's so easy. It's so easy to destroy stuff.
It's not hard.
Building something is hard, right? And one of my congregants asked me as we're getting this church plant going, hey, what do we do when somebody comes in and they don't land where we do on stuff? Like, do we just, he's like, do we go at them and kind of
throw them
all
the
this stuff head on
and
throw them off the bus and run over them and add them to the pile
and do it in the name of God?
Yeah. Right. No, that's not what we do at all. Right. If there's somebody and they've got this rickety foundation and the first thing you come in and take a sledgehammer to it, they are going to get defensive. Walls are going to go up and they're going to be ready to go to war. Right. If they're there, and as long as they're not undermining the unity of the church and everything, what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to lay a solid foundation next to that one. I'm going to give them the real thing and build that up and let them see that and give that to them. And then once they have that, once they have something else and they have an alternative, then you can take that thing apart and you're not leaving them homeless, right? There's something better to come to. And I feel like this is largely what happened with me. I was looking for so long for the pieces to come together. And it wasn't until I really got all those categories and everything and it all clicked, then the other stuff could go away. And I think that's the way we need to think about shepherding our people, right? Like, don't just blow up what they have first. Show them the real thing. And then you can take, then not only they just fade away, they'll just move out and leave because they don't see the need for it anymore. But you disarm and you provide them something. You don't just rip away the one thing they're holding on to.
That's helpful. Go ahead.
Hey, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say something that would be good to maybe jump on next is something that Patrick mentioned earlier. I think when we were offline, we were not recording. Just talking about how we could speak to people in thinking about ways that the members of churches can help in the building of a culture of leadership that's healthy. So obviously, if you're a leader, you want to divest authority, right? Like, you don't want one person to have it all. You want to spread that out over, preferably, I mean, we're all guys here who understand that the scriptures teach that churches singular should have elders plural, right? And so there should be multiple elders, multiple pastors that have that authority in any one congregation. And so how do we go about, guys, you know, as leaders, but also as members of the church, how do we go about inculcating, establishing a culture where, like, we do look at leadership as and understand rightly, like, it is done by this group of men who have been set aside to do this. And yeah, there might be one guy who is the main preacher functionally, maybe not, but oftentimes there is that guy. How can we guard against this kind of cult of personality? What are some things that should be in our minds for that?
Yeah, we work on this pretty hard in our own congregation. You know, one of the things we are wrestling with right now is when I have the predominant voice, or whoever the speaking pastor has the predominant voice, they tend to be the one that the church tends to relate with the most.
Sure.
And
you accrue an authority by doing that, John, by being the main preacher. No argument. about that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we try and multiple ways to help the congregation understand that as this church continues to grow, I don't have the capacity to shepherd every single person on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. And this is why we have a plurality of elders for two reasons. One, to shepherd and care for and keep each other accountable, but then share the load of mm-hmm. shepherding. And so one of the ways in which we do this at our church is that we, the elders take turns in doing the call to worship, doing communion. So they actually get to speak to the congregation every single week, multiple elders, because they have the opportunity to give Christ to them through the means of the sacrament of the table.
Amen.
And then we all go back to the back of the service so that we're there to greet everyone. And we all share the responsibility of meeting new people and connecting with them and encouraging them so that the congregation understands this is a team of men who are here to work together. I just so happen to carry the responsibility of focusing my attention throughout the week on counseling and the word. And these men also will do this, but they aren't paid to do it. And you can see this in the New Testament, where Paul even talks about there is a concept of those who have a job outside of the church, and then there are those who are paid by the church to focus in their mm-hmm. attention. And that became, according to the New Testament, a normal sense. I know there are denominations that don't believe that pastors should
brethren
be paid at
churches,
all.
Et cetera.
Yeah, which is kind of a weird thing. But I think it's important that the congregation understand that the elder, like I want the congregation to know that those elders shepherd me, and they have every right to call me to repentance, to call me to see my own sin. And why should any elder, including the speaking pastor, have to be held to a standard of basically he can't fail and he can't confess his sins and he can't be held accountable? That is creating a dictatorship. And really it's a dangerous position, because that pastor may have struggles and he cannot admit to them. Therefore, you're going to go long periods of time where you hide sin, and eventually it's going to catch you. And we've seen this. Anytime a pastor is in a congregation and he can't confess his own struggle and sin and cannot find balm for his soul from other men in the church, eventually that sin catches up to him and it gets him out of the ministry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think there's things structurally we can do as pastors and elders, and you guys talked about that. But I think there's ways that you get those of you who are lay people can encourage this kind of culture within mm-hmm. your church. And just piggybacking on what John just said, you can essentially deplatform your pastor, right? You can treat him with honor and respect, but also recognize that he is a sheep as well as a shepherd, right? Yeah. And allow him to be imperfect, allow him to struggle, allow him to, to generally wrestle with sin, and love mm-hmm. him and care for him in that, right? That's going to be healthy for him, because it's going to take that pressure to keep up an image and everything off, so you keep those accounts short and you don't end up in the thing that John talked about, right? And it's also going to be healthy for you, right? Because it's going to knock that pastor down in your eyes, not in a way that you don't respect him, but in a way that you don't replace Jesus with him. Right. Your hope in the person who won't fail you is Jesus, not your pastor.
No.
Right. And the more that you know that they are a fellow sinner in need of grace, the more that that gets reinforced in your mind and heart.
Yeah.
And one other thing before I let one of the other guys jump in there real quick is just, I think you can also do this by going to your other elders. Like if you're in a context that has a plurality, those other elders are just as called by God to shepherd and care for your soul as the guy who does most of the talking up front, right? And so
have been chosen correctly.
Right. Yes.
Well, sure. Yeah.
All that assumed, right? Yeah. Assuming they're biblical elders and all that, right?
Qualified men who have been ordained in appropriate ways.
And so there's these little ways we can buy into the whole celebrity thing, right? We're like, oh, well, I want to talk to the guy who talks up front.
Right.
No, like because proactively.
He's unique.
Those guys are going to have different gifts and skills and strengths. Yeah. And you are going to be better fed and better cared for if your spiritual care is diffused across those elders who have different strengths and weaknesses. And again, it helps prevent you from putting all your help in a man who is in Jesus.
Yeah. Just to very quickly put a just my reaction to what you two guys have just said, and then John, I'll throw it back at you. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that we as leaders do need to be mindful of this. We need to talk about our own frailties and our own frames honestly, right? Use discernment, mm-hmm. but do that so that people yes. don't just misunderstand that you've got it all figured out or have it all together. That's not helpful. We as leaders need to point people toward the other pastors of yes. the church, right? I think that's important. And then, yeah, I do agree completely with that last thing you said. Like, if you're a member of a church, get used to going to any one of your elders, any one of your pastors, because there's nothing you like super special about the guy who's the main preacher, other than that maybe he's the best preacher. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean that he's more gifted in other areas. In fact, oftentimes he is gifted as a preacher and a communicator, perhaps, but the other elders round out his gifts because he's weak in areas where they're strong. And so you might find that you benefit more from one-on-one conversations or whatever with one of the other pastors than you do the lead guy, quote unquote. So just even as a member, like discipline yourselves to go to all of your pastors for pastoral care and guidance and wisdom. Mm-hmm. And that helps it not just be all about this one guy, his thoughts, his vision, the way he articulates things, his turns of phrase, whatever. Because that can happen so easily.
Yeah, this is, boy, we're getting off on a sidetrack here, but I'm going to say it anyways. A lot of elders in churches, larger churches, are just good businessmen, and that's why they got chose to be elders. They're not shepherd. They're not theologically sound. They don't tend to the flock. And it does frustrate me when I see and hear about how elders function. And it's literally just a business meeting. They get together and talk about the finances and this and that. Yeah, and those men are sitting on that board, not because they're going to leave that board and then go carry a burden and shepherd and weep and administrate the gospel to those in need. They sit on that board because they're good at making financial and business decisions. And I'm sorry, but when we do elder training, it needs to be getting them prepared to be able to administrate God's word and carry the sheep as they need to be helped. And I don't care how successful you are as a businessman. That doesn't mean you're a good elder.
Yeah. Well, bro, I mean, if the ministry of the elders is the ministry of the word and prayer and then oversight, right? Like word, prayer, oversight, shepherding. That's what we do. So if those things don't characterize your elders' meetings, I do think something is wrong. Like if it's not word stuff, if it's not a lot of prayer, and I'm not trying to sound pietistic in saying that, but if we're not praying, you know, for our people and for our church in our elders' meetings, what are we doing? And that's then if we're not talking about issues of oversight and shepherding, whether that's individual members, individual sheep that we're talking about because we're concerned, you know, and we're trying to pastor them and we're updating each other and praying for those people, or whether we're just talking about like directions of the church, like what does this look like for us to herald Christ and love each other? And how can we do this in effective ways to be fruitful in our communities? You know, if that's not the kind of stuff we're talking about, if it's always like you're saying, John, of course you got to talk about business. But if that's really what the elders' meetings are, I think that's indicative of a problem.
Agree.
Yeah,
completely agree. Yeah. Well, what a great conversation. I know we could say a lot more, but we have got to get to work on other things. And, I know we say this all the time, but I hope you understand that as Theocast grows, it only grows because of what you guys are doing. It is true that it costs money. It costs money to get the stuff done. And the more support that we get, the ongoing support that we get, the more we can do. So we're excited. I'll even tell you guys this here because you're family. We have a new logo coming and we have some new books coming hopefully soon. We're going to rebranding some of our others.
We're going to rebrand all of our primers. Mm-hmm. They're going to be called something different. Yeah,
that's right. So we're thankful. The primary mission of Semper Reformanda is that you would find a community to be encouraged by, and that ultimately you would find yourself in a church and be able to then take what you've learned and build up that pastor and build up that church that they might be encouraged to continue the mission that's been given to our local churches. So hopefully you understand that, and we want you a part of our team. We want you a part of what we're doing, and we don't want anybody under any bus ever of Theocast. So we will see you all next week.